TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed, we are back for another edition of Raised by Wolves. Manny Hill, Derek James here with you. And
It's been a while.
It has been a while since we were on the pod at the same time together. The last one we had, you were out of town. You were at a wedding or something?
I think that was my... So my girlfriend's mom had her anniversary party.
Okay.
So that was out of town, so we went out
gotcha.
To that. And yeah.
How was it? Did it go good?
Yeah, well? It did. Yeah, it was fun.
Was it in town? Was it out of town? Or what?
No, it was in Wisconsin, practically upper peninsula Michigan.
Oh, so, yeah, okay.
It was out there.
How far of a drive was that then?
Only like 4 or 5 hours, so it's
okay.
Actually pretty quick.
That's not bad. Yeah, that's cool. Well, welcome back. Boy, we got a lot to talk about, don't we?
Why is everything on fire, Manny?
Doesn't it always seem that way with this team, though? Like, it just, there's something. I mean, it's good for us because it gives us even more stuff to digest and talk about, and it works out for us. But at the same time, it's just like, why do these things continue to just pop up? And there's always so much speculation. And I know, like, the Wolves will tell you that nothing to see here, everything's all good, we're all good. But mm-hmm. these things keep popping up, and you're just kind of like, something's got to be a little bit of fire to this smoke. Maybe not a blaze of fire, but there's got to be something going on here that I don't know. I don't know. So Brian Windhorst was talking recently on ESPN, and Brian, of course, is as tied in to the NBA as you can, as anybody.
Like, he's always struck me as a weird guy to be kind of a Wolves insider. Like, he had the Wolves and Tibbs stuff back in the February before he was hired.
Right.
And along the way, he's had little nuggets.
But he's basically saying, like, why has Karl Anthony Towns not signed his extension? And he said, and I'll just quote it, the fact that this isn't getting done yet is sort of eyebrow raising. To me, I believe he's going to sign it. There's never been a player who hasn't signed it. The question again will be, to me, what type of deal is it? Is it a full 5-year extension? Is it Kat saying, this is where I want to be? Or does he take does he take the shorter extension? So, I mean, now Kat can sign a 5-year, I think it could be up to $190 million if he makes another All-NBA team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if he doesn't make an All-NBA team, then it'll be 5 and, what, 158 or something like that? He gets like an extra 30 if he makes an All-NBA team or something like that.
A little side tangent that it really kind of sucks that All-NBA and All-Star
right.
kind of these things when players have little to no control over them.
But it also sounds like he could work out a 3-year extension around $88 million.
So that would practically be the Kevin Love extension, right? The 3+1.
Right. Yeah. And
that would also be a bad sign.
Yeah. I mean, because, well, no kidding, because we saw how that worked out with Kevin Love, right? Like, he signed it, but he wasn't really thrilled about signing it.
He only played, 2 years out of that?
Yeah. Well,
I don't think
he
opted in and said, I'm leaving. Because he re-signed in 2016. So, yeah, he did leave after the second year.
Yeah. Because it was because David Kahn was the one who gave him. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no uncertainty in that.
Yeah, it was 2012, right, when he signed that? Or 2012 when the extension kicked in.
13-14 was his last year because that was the failed playoff team, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was right because then Wiggins' first year was 15. 16, they win the title. They re-sign JR and eventually Tristan far down the road. Give Love that deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, like, so you have that, or, you know, I was on with Judd. I did 2 hours with Judd Zolgad this morning, and Doogie came in for the noon hour, and, I mean, we were just talking about, I mean, Kat could sign he could just go on his qualifying offer, which I think would be $10 million, and then after he plays out that season, which I think would be 19-20, then he would be an unrestricted free agent, and he would just walk if he wanted to. I mean, listen, this guy is one of the most talented players in the NBA. Like, he can do whatever he wants on the floor. He has the ability to do almost whatever he wants on the floor offensively. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's some room for growth defensively and everything. But he is, to me, he is too talented for this to even be an issue right now. And I don't understand why this is an issue. I don't understand, like, why are we having, you and I have talked about this before, why are we having this conversation about Karl Anthony Towns? We should not be having this conversation about Cat. But we have to because it's, I mean, it's there.
This has to be one of the most dysfunctional franchises in the NBA, like, far and away. And, I mean, you just look at kind of what's been the common theme. It's been the ownership. I mean, no matter who's been in place, there's always been weird questions like this. Even when they made the playoffs and it ended and there was still all this uncertainty and all this weird stuff when things should be exciting and we should be looking forward to the things to come, but we're not. We're dreading. We're wondering what's going to happen next. And this town stuff is really, I mean, I thought it would have been done by now. Like, I was like, okay, it takes a while. You know, maybe, you know, Towns wants to, you know, have his say and be like, all right, you know, we need to figure this out and, you know, really sit down.
And you could look at the, you could look at the Wiggins thing last year because Andrew signed his new deal really, like, basically at the 11th hour.
And even though we had him in front of him for 6 months, I guess.
Right. But that's, I mean, you know, the Wiggins thing from last year, it's whatever. I mean, that was last year. This is a different situation because this guy is so vital and so important to your franchise. Like, you cannot screw this up. You cannot screw this up. You can't.
It is actually almost impossible to. Like, it's right. Yeah, it's possible, but it's really impossible to.
Because everybody, every star, and Doogie said it today. He was talking to me and Judd, and he said it today. Like, everybody signs this deal. Every young player that gets this first big contract after his rookie deal, they sign it. But
you're basically guaranteed, if you draft a stud in the lottery, you are guaranteed to have them for 8 years.
Yeah.
Like, this is just the process. This is just the way things go.
Devin Booker signed his deal.
Oh,
earlier,
yeah,
this summer. And there was no question of, oh, well, you know, is he getting it? You know, what's the relationship, right?
And the, like, Suns are player? Weird.
Yeah.
Weird things happen in Phoenix. Everyone who leaves the Suns has something negative to say, whether it's Goran Dragic, it's Isaiah Thomas. I think Steve Nash is the only exit they didn't really screw up.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, just to even have that organization have it more figured out and handle their young players and young talent better than you is a little bit embarrassing. So, I mean, it's whether, like, is this the culture that you've created where you have almost alienated or ostracized your young star because you've put Tom Thibodeau in such a position of power that there is no one to check him to resolve this situation because he favors his guy, Jimmy Butler, who's a fantastic player, but obviously,
and who we all love.
He is such a strong personality that, yeah, he does rub guys the wrong way. It happened in Chicago. It's happening here. And it didn't take a lot of time for that to play out. So what do you do now that you're Glenn? I mean, are you going to fire the coach and your president of basketball operations and still pay him $24 million to sit at home? Like, that's a tough pill to swallow. Do you trade Jimmy Butler? That's a really tough pill to swallow because you just traded Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn, who turned into
and Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, Lauri Markkanen, because they're effective players. And now you're facing the possibility, okay, well, if I just, you know, play nice and, you know, try to salvage this relationship, do I alienate Towns and have him walk away and then have two things happen with Butler, I feel like. The most realistic things, he walks away after this season, or you re-sign him and he's banged up and you're just trying to survive that contract for a few years. Like, none of those are good options.
And that's the thing. And I said, and I've been saying this too, like, I love Jimmy Butler, but if you, okay, you sign him to a new contract, you give him a max, you give him the five, and I guess he would get the five and 192 or something like that, right? Similar to what Cat would get, right? Okay, Are you going to be okay with paying Jimmy Butler, a 34-year-old Jimmy Butler, $40-some million a year? And what is Jimmy going to be like when he's 34?
Well, paying $30 million for Andrew Wiggins, and we don't really have a lot of signs to say that, yeah, he'll be worth it by the time that day comes.
And, you know, I mean, because I don't know what kind of player, Jimmy's a fantastic player now, but I don't know what he's going to look like at 34. And granted, at 34, you're getting close to the end of the contract, so it's not, you know, it would be what it is at that point. But, I mean, these are all things that you have to think about. And if you are in a position where Karl Anthony Towns could potentially not be here because he's not getting along with Jimmy, or, you know, he has a differencing on like philosophy. I don't know exactly what is going on here, but something is happening and something is going on that should not be going on.
Like, and I was talking to some people, and Sean Hyken was one of them, got friend of the podcast, and we were talking about this, and it's like someone said, oh, well, you know, maybe Jimmy can change his approach, or Towns can change his approach. And it's like, Towns tweets about, hey, everybody, leave me alone, they're re-releasing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Meanwhile, Jimmy Butler wonders why everyone just can't work as hard as him and become as great as he is. Like, he's never going to change that mindset. It's like he had this, like, impoverished mindset coming in where he had to fight for everything, and he doesn't know any other way, and he just can't let go of that, and he doesn't understand.
And he doesn't understand why everybody's not like him.
It's like kind of like the Kobe thing of, why can't you just be as good as me? And it's really kind of a damaging mindset, and he just doesn't understand how Towns can take this so less seriously.
I'll go back to, and this is kind of a very simple comparison, but I'll go back to, I remember watching Inside the NBA once, and Kenny Smith was talking about how when he was playing in Sacramento and Bill Russell was the coach, it was like the mid to late 80s, and Kenny was like in his first or second year in the league or whatever, and the Kings were not very good. Bill Russell was coaching them, and Kenny said that Bill Russell would just, you know, they weren't a very good rebounding team, and Bill Russell would say, you know, where they would ask him, well, like, because he would say, oh, you guys, we got to rebound better, and they would ask him, like, coach, how do you rebound better? And Bill Russell would just say, well, you just go get it. You just go get the ball.
See, that's such.
And Kenny's point was like, yeah, but you could just go get the ball because you were Bill Russell.
It's such an innate instinctual thing too, especially rebounding.
Yeah. I mean, so to me, it's just like with this thing with Jimmy and Kat and, you know, to a lesser extent, Wiggins, it just seems to me like it's a very similar situation. Like, Jimmy has this undying competitive edge and just this toughness and this desire to win and be great and all of that. And if you ask him, how do you do that? And it's for him, and it's almost like in his mind, it's just, well, that's just how you are. You just do that. And he's just kind of expecting Kat to just be that way. And it's like, no, you gotta. Look, I'm not saying Karl Anthony Towns needs to be babied or coddled or anything like that, but he's so vital to the future of the franchise that you've got to find a way to reach him, because he is still a young player. And as good as he is, there's still a lot of room for growth with him as a player.
Given how young he is, too.
Yeah, he's 22. He's going to be 23 in a couple of months, but he's still. I mean, physically, yeah, he's been a productive and terrific player, but does he need to grow up to a degree? Yes, of course. We all have a different mindset at 22 than we do now in our late 20s,
even by the time you're 25, the way you think is different from the way you're 21, 22.
But it's like, to me, I feel like Tibbs and Jimmy, if this is really what an issue is for them, they have got to find a way to get him to mature and not just sit back and just have it be like, well, he's just not doing it the way we do it. It's like, okay, well, you got to find a way to reach him. You got to find a way to connect him to get, because he's so vital. You cannot screw this up. You cannot screw this up. This is your franchise right now. This guy. And there's a lot of room for growth with him. Does he need to get better defensively? Yes, of course. We all know that. But if you lose him, where do you go?
Yeah.
Where do you go?
I mean, do you have?
If he decides, and he very well could do this, do I still think that he's going to sign the max extension? Yeah, I think they're going to get it worked out. But there is something to this, and they need to get this right. They need to get this right. Because if he leaves, and you're sitting there, and you got Jimmy Butler still, which is fine, but then you got Wiggins on his deal.
It's probably fine for a little bit.
It's fine for a little bit, but he's too good, man. He's too good to screw this up.
Just to have this sort of tension. And I think you guys were talking on the show today. Like, even if you do have, like, you know, a sit down, lay it all out there meeting, how often does that really remedy things? I mean, because it usually just comes undone eventually down the road. So, I mean, that's kind of tells me something that we've suspected for a while, that this probably isn't working. If you have to come to the point where you have to, you know, just have a heart-to-heart meeting with everyone in the room, that tells me that the communication's been rotten for so long and that so many bad feelings have just already soaked in that this might already be irreparably damaged. I don't know anything, but that's just kind of the read on it based on how these things typically play out.
Yeah, I just think that Karl Anthony Towns is just way too important for this sort of thing. Like we talked about earlier this summer, how do we even get here? Like, how did we get to a point where it's like we're actually wondering if he's going to sign that deal? Because it should be a no-brainer for him to just, like, this should have been done months ago.
This should have been the easiest
last thing that people should even have to be concerned about.
Here's $200 million for the next 5 years.
And boom, all right, where do I sign? I'm ready to be here.
But I mean,
that should have been it. And then you worry about free agency and what else they're going to do, and are people healthy, and you know what other moves can they make, and you just worry about the season. But now it's like, we're a month away from.
Well,
training
they fired
camp.
Towns' guy Vince Legarza or whatever, or his last name was.
Yeah.
And in the name of, I should be the one to have that relationship with him. It's like, dude, you've never built relationships anywhere. I mean, that's the funny thing. Like, he's talked about, you know, trying to be a little more warming up to guys. But it's like, you've been the same guy for 60 years, man. Like, you're not just going to change overnight. If you have someone here who has a connection with Towns and a connection to this franchise, that's already working in your favor. And you can work on that over time. But to immediately cut that cord and say, no, I should be that guy, when your closest ally in the locker room is the guy who, Jimmy Butler, who has probably some of the most animosity towards Towns. Like, that's not helping. And I just think maybe this will be a segue. But, and then you see all these rumors, like, bring in Derrick Rose. You hear the Luol Deng rumors. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the Joakim Noah speculation. He's not even on the market. And you wonder just what the division could be if things continue the way that they are and just how messy this could end. Because the way it's looking, something needs to change. Something needs to change the direction and the course of this franchise. And, I mean, it's so hard to believe that we're talking about a team that won, what, 46, 47 games and
47
made the playoffs.
Games. First playoff berth in 14 years. Yeah.
Things have never been worse.
So I tweeted out that, okay, let's say – you know, let's say they bring in Luol Deng, because that's kind of the story that came out this week. Mark Stein first, I think, was the first one to put it out that the Wolves are going to be in pursuit of Luol Deng, it sounds like.
And then Shams followed that up, too.
Right, yeah. And okay. If you were listening to Mackie and Judd the other day on Wednesday, I believe it was.
There's a little snippet on Instagram.
There's a little snippet on Instagram, and it was on Twitter, an audiogram on Twitter, of me kind of going off at the end of the 11 o'clock hour.
I was so glad that they sprung that on you right then and there.
Oh, I mean, it was, I don't even remember what we were going to do at the show you know, at the show at that time. But then that popped up. The Stein, Mark Stein tweet popped up, and it just changed everything. Okay, so, you know, I went on like a couple minutes towards the end of the 11 o'clock hour the other day and just kind of went off on the idea of bringing in Luol Deng. And let me be very, very clear with something here. I have been a fan of Luol Deng for a long time. Like, I've always liked him as a player. For majority of his career, I've liked him as a player. You know, he's always been versatile. He's been a good defender. He rebounds well.
By all accounts, a good dude in the locker room, too.
Yeah, and that was a big part of it, too, because I always, you know, I obviously had never interacted with him personally, but I'd see him do post-game interviews and other sorts of interviews, and I was like, he seems like a real good dude, like real good locker room dude, good teammate, says all the right things and everything. So
he had every right to eviscerate the Bulls after he left for the fact that they almost killed him and how many times that franchise threw him under the bus.
Yeah, and so here is my issue with bringing in a Luol Deng, and it really has less to do with Luol himself than it, and more to do with just, I think, where the franchise is right now, and, you know, the head coach and other players that are on the team and everything. I just don't understand this continued obsession with just bringing in Bulls players, former Bulls players.
This process is bad.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't understand like why that always has to be what is done. I don't understand that. Like, and Doogie came in today and he was talking, and he was talking about all the other guys that they bring in this week. About, you know, I think Nick Young and Corey Brewer and
John Jenkins,
Marcus Georges Hunt,
who was
on the team last year.
He has to audition against. I mean, most of these guys are kind of scrubs, and he has to audition with the rest of these guys when the team has already seen him. They've already had him around, and yet Luol Deng, the guy who hasn't played in 2 years despite being healthy, is the front runner.
Right. Well, and that was the thing that Doogie said, was they're bringing in all these guys, and then he said, but they're waiting on Luol Deng to make a decision next week. And I'm like, why is it that way? All due respect to Luol Deng, like, why are they sitting here waiting for Luol Deng to decide if he's going to sign here or not before they think about anybody else? Why are you bringing all these other guys in if you're just going to wait on Luol Deng?
I mean,
I don't get it. I don't get that.
And everyone's saying, oh, it's a minimum deal, be no big deal, not like he would play. He would absolutely play.
We would definitely play. And to me, the money, the minimum deal, fine. Like, that's not, I'm not saying Luol Deng's going to come in and destroy the franchise and set everything back by 5 years because he's going to sign this huge contract. No, it's not. I understand the contract portion of it. That's not what is bugging me about this. And it's not even the fact that it's Luol Deng. That's not bugging me about it either. It's just, I told this to Judd, it's very much like when Brad Childress was the head coach of the Vikings, and he would bring in, like, former Philadelphia Eagle wide receiver. Like, he would bring in former fifth wide receivers from the Philadelphia
Not
Eagles.
Not even Todd Pinkston, but even farther down.
Todd Pinkston was here for a brief moment. I think for a brief moment.
I don't remember that.
Todd Pinkston was in a Vikings uniform, I'm not mistaken. I hadn't even thought about him. But now that you mention him, I think Todd Pinkston did
have a stop
with the Vikings.
I remember the Greg Lewis's, the Kelly Holcomb's, the whichever Detmer it was, Ty or
Coy. Detmer.
Coy Detmer, okay.
Well, Coy just popped up for like 2 days because they had two, because like Tavares Jackson was hurt and like.
Wasn't Gus banged up too or something?
This was 2007.
Oh, okay.
And
so farther.
The three quarterbacks then were Tavares Jackson, Kelly Holcomb, and Brooks Bollinger. And I think two of the guys, Jackson was one of them, but two of the guys were hurt, and they brought in Corey
Detmer
for
2 days. I think Brooks Bollinger just sucked. That was part of the problem.
Yeah, but I think like legitimately two of them were hurt.
Yeah.
Jackson was like legitimately injured, and then either Holcomb or Bollinger was also injured, And then so they brought in Coy Detmer for like 2 days, and then they realized like whichever one of those guys was injured was actually going to be okay, and then they let Coy go. So like Coy Detmer was with the Vikings for like 2 days during the week, and just, you know. But yeah, and 2006, Todd Pinkston was with the Vikings in the in the preseason. But like Billy McMullen and Greg Lewis, and Greg Lewis made the great catch in the Favre game and all that stuff. That was fine. But basically same thing. Hank Basket. Like that's what this is to me with the Wolves. Like, it's just gotta bring in my guys.
Didn't coach McNabb here, did he?
No, McNabb came. That was Leslie Frazier, 2011. Yeah, that was the year after Chili was fired. But yeah, we've seen plenty of former Philadelphia Eagles end up in Vikings uniforms. Sheldon Brown, the former
Bears receivers.
Lito Shepherd was the guy I think that ended up, the cornerback, ended up with the Vikings too at one point. But my point is, this to me just seems like. And the fact that they're like waiting, it sounds like they're waiting for Luol Deng
to make
a decision.
You're waiting on 2018 Luol Deng. Do you hear yourself?
To decide like your 14th roster spot. And look, I'm not saying that, you know, because people say, well, what's the big deal? It's a minimum salary and it's just.
It's the process.
It's a 14th
roster. It's not the result.
It's just, right. It's just like, come on. What are we doing?
See, now
what are we doing?
When it was Jimmy and Taj, and I've said this on the show many times, I've written it. They're good basketball players.
Yes.
Derrick Rose? Sorry, I don't think the 5 to 10 games that he played well are going to override.
Well, he played well in the playoffs. Yeah. Derrick Rose played well in a playoff series that you lost in 5 games. You were going to lose that playoff series in 5 games, whether Derrick Rose was there or not.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear about how great Derrick Rose played in the playoffs. Good for him, okay? He played well. Good for him, but it didn't move the needle. It didn't help them. It didn't make a difference. They still got beat by the Rockets.
Gibson, I mean, those guys were incredible last season. And I mean, regardless of who they had previously played for, they were good additions.
Yes.
There are a lot of question marks around the other ones, aside from like Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks is pretty inconsequential.
Yeah, third point guard.
Whatever. But yeah. Still, I mean, it's just so weird when we get to the point where, like, it's been. Someone reported that they would have interest in both Deng and Noah if they were both on the market, and it's the least surprising thing. And
that's the other part of it. The moment I found out, the news reported, I think it was on Saturday, actually, because I was watching college football with a buddy of mine, and it just flashed across the screen. Lakers reach a buyout with Luol Deng, and I thought, well, we know what's coming next. We know what's happening next. 2 days later.
It's going to be the same thing with Noah, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Dane,
our guy Dane Moore, who does a great job covering the Wolves and discussing the Wolves, he tweeted at me that it sounds like if the Knicks were going to buy out Joakim Noah, they would have done it already because there's some – I'd have to reread the tweet that he sent me, but that if they were going to do it, it was going to save them more money to do it if they would have done it by a certain date or something, and they didn't do it, so it's probably not likely that they actually will. So he's probably going to be with the Knicks this year, or they'll have to trade him or something like that.
Or unless Joe just comes to them and says, all right, I'm sick of not playing. I want an opportunity. Let's figure something out.
Right. But nonetheless, I tweeted out and said, okay, let's say Luol Deng signs with the Wolves, which hasn't happened yet. We'll be clear on that. As of Friday, September 7th, that we're taping this podcast, it hasn't happened yet. But if Luol Deng signs with the Wolves and the Knicks buy out Joakim Noah and Joakim Noah and the Wolves go after him, which you know they probably will, you're looking at Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, Derrick Rose, Luol Deng, Joakim Noah. 5 former Chicago Bulls.
5 of the most
on your
prominent.
Roster.
You're just missing 5 of the Carlos most Boozer.
You're just missing Carlos Boozer and the brief stay that Pau Gasol had there.
Oh, Lord.
And don't think that if the Spurs decide to part ways with Powell, don't think for a second that there wouldn't be some.
I might be able to excuse that one, even if he's like 40 years old.
Because Powell is still actually a decent player.
He's a good dude too.
Yeah, but you've got 5 former Chicago Bulls that would be on your roster. hypothetically speaking. That's legitimate. Like, that's like a legitimate starting lineup from the Bulls from like 5 years ago. It could have been.
It's just such a weird thing. Nobody does this. And except then, for like Doc Rivers, and he would try to sign or trade for guys who beat up on his Celtics teams.
Yeah.
But this is, yeah, this is a whole nother level of weird.
And it would be a third of your roster. A third of your roster would be former Chicago Bulls players. And you know, played under Tom Thibodeau.
And this stuff does cause problems. Tyus Jones went to Tom Thibodeau and said, hey, what's the deal here? Because all of a sudden, he's kind of the third point guard on the depth chart. I mean, Tibbs has said, yeah, I want to play Teague, Rose, and Tyus together. But there's not really a path for steady minutes, you know, that you can see with Derrick Rose in tow. And now we have the Towns and Jimmy Butler thing where that's causing a problem. And even probably with Andrew Wiggins. We haven't talked a lot about Andrew Wiggins because we don't hear much from Andrew Wiggins.
Here's the other thing, too. Let's also remember you have Josh Okogie and Kata Bates-Japp this roster, maybe, too. Really. And what would this mean for them? Like, you're Josh Okogie, okay. You're a wing player. You're a little bit undersized, but you've got the wingspan that makes up for it, so you can play a couple of different positions, ideally, hypothetically, in theory, right?
Yeah.
So you've got Butler, you've got Wiggins, you've got Rose. So if you bring in Luol Deng, where does Josh Okogie fit in there? And you know that I have said several times that there needs to be, in my opinion, there needs to be a focus on developing these young guys. And if you're just going to have, if Josh Okogie is going to be sitting on the roster and not playing because Derrick Rose is getting playing time and Luol Deng is getting playing time, and obviously you have Butler and Wiggins, and you got Teague and you got Tyus.
That's not a lot of room.
There's not a lot of room there. There's not a lot of room there.
Plus you have Anthony Tolliver who can play the three and four.
Yeah. So what does that mean for
Bates-Japp never plays then? Or he plays exclusively in Iowa.
Yeah. And honestly, what does that mean for Josh Okogie? Is Josh Okogie gonna end up in Iowa? I mean, that's what sort of bugs me about this whole thing is just
there are all these ripple effects, too. Like, yeah. None of these decisions are made in a vacuum. Like, they all have real consequences.
And and Tibbs' theory is, you know, rookies need to earn minutes and everything. And it's like, okay, all right, that's fine. But how is Josh Okogie going to earn minutes?
Mm-hmm.
If you are going to play your guys that you coached in Chicago, you're going to play Derrick Rose a significant amount of time. If you bring in Luol Deng, you're probably going to play him a significant amount of time.
Well, we saw
where
this,
does Josh Okogie earn minutes?
We saw this last season with Gorgui Dieng and Taj Gibson. I mean, I went through after the season. I think I wrote this for the Step Back on Fansided. And I went through and I looked at Gorgui Dieng's minutes versus, you know, when he plays, you know, more minutes than, you know, fewer minutes and all that versus when he starts, when he comes off the bench. And the numbers show throughout his entire career, so about a 5-year sample, he's much more effective when he plays over 20 minutes than he is when he plays fewer than 20 minutes. And that information is out there. And even when he struggles, it's because he is a guy who needs to get a feel for the game. And so how are you going to have a young guy come and be like, well, he's terrible in the 4 minutes a night we play him? Well, of course he's terrible in 4 minutes a night. You can't get a true feel and get enough experience in the NBA with 4 minutes a night, probably, presumably, in blowouts.
Garbage time.
Yeah. And I just don't, that's really what this is shaping up to be, with the caveat of if Luol Deng is signed, and he's probably going to be signed.
Yeah. I just don't know where. I like Josh Okogie a lot, and I want to see what he has. I want to see what the type of player that he's going to be.
I want to see if Tom Thibodeau can actually teach and coach.
Yeah.
Like, that's the big thing. Then that's what these moves have told me all along. Like, oh, well, these guys, oh, he doesn't do what Derrick does, so I'm going to go get Derrick Rose. Oh, well, Gorgui Dieng isn't quite Taj Gibson.
So I'm going to
teach
get Taj
him, but
Gibson.
That could take a while, so I'll just go get Taj Gibson. Andrew Wiggins, he's not really doing, you know, Jimmy Butler or Luol Deng things. I got Jimmy, I'll go get Luol Deng just to, you know, cover myself. Like, that's not effective coaching. That's not like if you're putting together, you know, an Olympic team, great. You want the best players in that moment. Mm-hmm. But if you're here for 4 or 5 years and you're looking to grow this thing long term, you need to actually be able to develop players and actually make connections to grow this thing into something that represents itself well to the outside. And because what's unfolded has been bad.
And if you're going to have Andrew Wiggins locked up into this long-term deal, which they are, which begins this year, and you're going to have Karl-Anthony Towns, hopefully, locked up for a 5-year contract, and you're going to have, ideally, you want to sign Jimmy Butler to a long-term extension after this season, right? Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of money to go around here. So you can't just, you're not going to be able to just go out in free agency and sign another max player or sign another player. So you've got to utilize what you have. You have to utilize what the talent that you have. So Josh Okogie needs to be developed into something.
Well, we've talked about this. How
it doesn't have to be a star, just developing into a guy who can help and contribute.
Well, we talked about this too. Like, I mean, a lot of like the fan disappointment's been, well, they didn't really go out and get a shooter. Like, they got Anthony Tolliver, cool, but they need more help. And it's like, are you going to do that? You know, are you going to put these guys into these roles? Like, oh, hey, yeah, Josh, we want you to just take open threes. You're just going to get open in the corner, catch and shoot. Don't think about anything. Don't worry about dribbling, and we'll build on your game from there. Or, you know, Kade Bates-Jopp, or bringing in guys like Marcus Georges Hunt. Like, how much does it suck that he has to try out amongst all these other guys when he's already been on the team and when he's not even the front runner?
Yeah.
It's just all so weird.
It is. It is, nonetheless. All right. I just want to say something to wrap this thing up. And I'm using this particular platform to do it because chances are I'm not going to be allowed to really do it when when I would like to actually do it. And that is, I want to speak on Patrick Roycey and Joe Souchere. Pat specifically because, you know, I've worked on Pat's show for the last almost 3 years now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been working here at 1500 ESPN for 6 years, and I started out as, you know, I was working other jobs in the broadcasting industry, and I started out working here. I was just working the Saturday night shift. I'd come in on Saturday nights from 6 to midnight, and I'd just run the board, and a lot of times we'd have ball games on, and just being a weekend part-time worker. Eventually it transitioned to me working Sunday morning sports talk with Corzo. I did that for about 6 months, and then there were a couple of changes made around the station, and I was added to the ride. And Pat has been unbelievable to me, and he's been an incredible influence, and he has always been somebody who has been in my corner and has always encouraged me. And you can't put a price on that, because he didn't have to do that. And when, you know, that when there was a change at the ride, on the ride, you know, they needed to add another person to the show, and Pat made it a point that he wanted me to be a part of it because I had been filling in, you know, when people were gone.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
I remember when you said, hey, I'm going to start, you know, on the ride. I was like, oh,
yeah,
because really
it was shortly
cool.
After we started doing Raised by Wolves.
And, I didn't know that.
And this was December of 2015. And Pat basically said, like, I want Manny to be a part of this. And, I, you know, and that meant everything to me. That meant just, that was everything to me, because it's, you know, I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for Pat. You know, I'd read his columns and everything when I was younger, and there were some that would drive me crazy and I would disagree with and everything, but that's Pat, and that's what has made Roycey so great. And so for him to look at me and say that he wanted me to be a part of his show when he did not have to do that,
mm-hmm.
I'm forever grateful for him. And certainly, you know, Reavers and Rookie and you know, Kenny Olsen and Johnny Height and Joe Souchere and everybody that, you know, a lot of big changes are happening here at 1500 ESPN. And, you know, I just have a tremendous amount of respect and appreciation for everybody that I just named. And Brad Lane, of course, our now former program director. I've talked with Brad and everything about just how much I appreciated him as well. And,
you know, I just kind of...
No, go ahead.
Just real quick, just to kind of echo what you've been saying. Brad, I mean, was, you know, it's like, you're the programming director, but he was always, you know, hey, nice to meet you. Hey, how are you doing? This or that. I mean, he even knew, he knows one of my professors. They've been close friends for years because Brad's wife worked with him at a job, and he helped me out with a project last year, sat down for an hour out of his day just talking about PR stuff and communications and how not to be a pain in the backsides of people. And that was really cool that he took that time. And just, you know, just every time, you know, he always had a great attitude and was always very welcoming to everyone. But yeah, with Pat, I don't think a lot of people expect those kind of stories like what you shared.
Yeah.
I remember when I started at 1500, I was talking to Derek Wetmore, the web editor of 1500ESPN.com. And, you know, he was talking about Patrick Royce is one of the most supportive people of young up-and-coming writers and talent that you will ever meet. And I was like, really? Like, I never would have guessed, you know, based on his Twitter personality.
Because people look at Pat and they think, well, he's just this old, crusty old guy that just has this old school mind and everything. And it's just, that could not be further from the truth.
And I remember I had one interaction before that with Royce, really, where he was very unhappy with the middle infield of the 2010 Twins with Orlando Cabrera and J.J. Hardy, I think. Yeah, I think it was J.J. Hardy. And I said something to him. He goes, do I have your permission to continue bitching about the middle infield? Was his reply. And he didn't even block me with it, which is cool. But then, I mean, just over time, like every time it's, hey, how are you doing? Handshake, all that. Like, it's just been really cool. I mean, and just he'll ask me questions about the Wolves. Like, you know, I've been around forever. And so, I mean, just to have that kind of respect for, you know, a peer and a colleague versus, because that's not always the case. There are certain media members, even in this town, who will always do the credential check, like, who are you? Why are you here? What are you doing? Why should you be here? I mean, so not everyone is that way. And just to, you know, just having that presence, you know, no longer here and around. Well, he'll still be around town. He'll still be at the Strip, but not around the station.
But my tongue is tied. Forgive me. The Ride with Royce, Garage Logic and Sports Talk, they're ending their run, their on-air run at 1500 ESPN today, the day we tape this, September 7th.
It's kind of weird because, I mean, in high school, my dad would pick me up and we'd go run around, do stuff, and he'd always have Garage Logic on, and it's pretty much been around, I'm almost 30, so it's been around almost my entire life.
Yeah.
So not to have that show on is going to be, I mean, I listen to it once in a while sometimes. But just not to have those guys around is going to be really weird because they were definitely a big fixture of the station.
And you know, and GL will continue on. It's going to be in podcast form. And Joe and the boys will be continuing to do that. So you can check that out, garagelogic.com. Give them a little plug as well. And Pat's going to be doing, it sounds like Pat's going to be doing some things with us too still. But just, I just needed to take this moment to let people know that just how much I appreciate Patrick Royce specifically for allowing me to be a part of his show for the last almost 3 years. And I'm going to miss doing it. And I'm going to miss seeing Pat every day in the studio. I'm going to miss seeing a lot of these guys. And thank you guys. I appreciate you guys.
It's going to be a little weird around here without those
guys. It is going to be a little bit weird. And I just want to say thank you guys for allowing me to be a part of what you guys do on occasion, because you didn't have to bring me in with warm arms like you guys did, but I appreciate you guys for doing that. Thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves this week. We'll talk to you next time. For Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. Wolves season going to be underway here very, very shortly, and we'll see
media day in a few weeks, probably.
Media day in a few weeks, training camp, preseason. And the next thing you know, the season will be starting up in about mid-October. So until next time, enjoy your NBA offseason, and we'll talk to you next time.